Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you, and you're going to be glad you're hanging out with me because we got Jim Copeland back on the show. Jim is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, director of the Center for Legal Policy at the at the Manhattan Institute, and also for policy research. He is our good friend and one of the guys we turn to when we want to understand what's going on with regard to public policy that affects small businesses. And he's got some information for us. Jim Copeland, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Jim, let's just report on what happened over the weekend. I think pretty much everybody knows, but let's just discuss that just a little bit. The Senate voted to suspend what they call cloture, right? Which is the filibuster.
Cloture vote to cut off debate, which means they can take a vote on the health care bill
on the floor
without having a filibuster. Historically, one senator could just keep talking and perpetuate debate. Well, as that was used to block civil rights era legislation, I think rightly the Senate said, well, If we've got at least 40 out of 100 senators, then we can cut off debate and actually take a vote, which was moving toward a majoritarian rule, but certainly not as far as the House would go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically been the rule over the last 40, 50 years. That's been the governing rule in the Senate. So 40 senators plus one can continue debating a bill and block a bill, and it's basically a counter-majoritarian check on change in the Senate rules. But once that threshold's passed, which is what happened this weekend, where all the Democrats and the Democrat-aligned independents, all 60 of them lined up to vote for cloture and then debate, that means that basically this train, or some of us would say train wreck, that's a health care bill, is now barreling down the tracks, and there's not much anyone can do to stop it.
Because it's a fait accompli now.
That the large majority in the Senate and the House will be able to get something through.
A health care bill is a fait accompli now, isn't it?
I think that's basically correct. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. There's still divergences among the senators, between the Senate and the House, but I think something's going to come through.
See, here's the thing that makes it so annoying and upsetting to me about this. As you know, Jim, this isn't my first health care debate rodeo. I mean, I've been talking about health care reform on this show with some of the leading experts on the planet, like you, like Grace Marie Turner, and others. And I'm talking about for 10-plus years I've been doing this. And we've been offering – I've had Senator Enzi on the show, which, as you know, was the leader of buying insurance across state lines and small business health associations. And he's talked about this on the show years ago. It was proposed in the House 8 times and passed the House 8 times, never was able to get through the Senate because the Democrats, and I'm talking about Kennedy primarily, and folks, I'm not trying to be partisan here, I'm just calling the votes as they were, would not let that go through. So my point is, there have been lots of health care reform nuggets that could have one little piece at a time turned things around and made things more efficient, made things where more and more people could get insurance, and it made things more efficient. Those were rejected by the current people who currently are trying to take over one-sixth of our economy. And that's the thing that burns me, Jim, is the most.
Well, I think we clearly need to reform our health care system. The costs have been spiraling out of control. The government, it's important to realize, pays for a majority of health care in this country. About 50% of the health care is already coming through Medicare and Medicaid, and the costs keep going up. They're particularly tough on small businesses, on your listeners.
Yes, there's no question. I live this. This is my world.
this is what folks don't quite understand. Everyone thinks, oh, this is big business against the little guy. No, it's not. It's really big government and big business against small business and the little guy. And that's to some degree what's happening. And clearly there are little guys that are getting squeezed in the current system that they can't get health coverage.
But that's because the little guys, us little companies, weren't allowed to deduct health care insurance the same way that big companies were.
The big companies already do this. The big companies already pay health care. They already often have these sort of Cadillac plans, these expensive health care plans negotiated with labor
completely
unions.
Completely deductible.
That's right. And big business has not been against this. I can talk to it more if you're taking a break.
Hold on to that thought. We've got to come back to this, folks. Folks, I'm the pathological optimist. I still think, I don't think we can stop it, but I think we can affect it. And you and I still have time to do that. We need to stay involved, stay connected to this process. 20 Till, right back with Jim Copeland. Stay with us.
That's a lot of up for mercy, if you please.
Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. We built it so you can have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Lots of stuff there. Interviews, archives of those, thousands of articles that I've written or my Brain Trust members have written. You can find my blog there. My newsletter is there. AskJim.biz, where you can get questions and answers. Ask questions and get answers, I should say, are all right there. And all of that's free. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. SmallBusinessAdvocate.com is the main website, and my website. And then, as I say, if you're on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Jim Copeland is with us. He's with the Manhattan Institute. And we're talking about this healthcare thing. Jim, you're making an excellent point that I've been making with my other experts here for all these years. And that's the fact that the tax advantages for big businesses with regard to providing health care for their employees has not been the same for small businesses historically. And see, my point on all this is that we need to take all that government subsidy and break it away from the corporations and give it to the individuals. What do you think?
I totally agree. I mean, I think that's how we should go with health care in general. But
yes.
What you've got are these big businesses are big lobbying forces, and they protect their interests. So the big insurance companies don't want what Senator Enzi's talking about. They don't want competition across state lines for insurance policies because that's going to drive their profit margins down.
It's going to make them have to be more competitive. It's going to open up. Now, see, this is the thing that blows me away. How can with any kind of a straight face, folks, if you want to see an example of someone having no shame, watch a politician of any party talk about competition in government in the same breath. Jim, what do you think?
Well, their notion of competition is to bring the government into it, but not to let actual private competition flourish. And if you look at someone like Joe Lieberman, and I tend to like Joe Lieberman.
I like Joe Lieberman. I do.
On this cloture vote, but what's he really talking about when he's opposed to he wants insurance mandates, but he's opposed to the public option. Well, he's really protecting insurance company interests because he's from Connecticut, which is where the insurance companies are headquartered.
Right.
And that's what's really driving such things. So I think he's right to be against the public option because I think government getting in here is really, in the long run, a way for government to take over the health insurance market. But the individual mandates are going to impose insurance on people for whom it's not affordable. And that's not the solution to the problem. I mean, the insurance companies like it, just like the pharmaceutical companies are behind these bills because they've got gimmies in them to get new people to buy drugs by being covered through these insurance mandates.
Jim, so, what I don't understand is how can we be sitting here looking at Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, totally the U.S. Postal Service, all bankrupt entities, all run by the government, And now we're talking about creating another entity in those images. What I don't understand why I just don't get that. Am I missing something?
Well, people don't see that all those things are bankrupt. I mean, people certainly aren't that fond of the post office, but when it comes to Medicare, people like it. They don't realize
that even though they know it's a train wreck
mandate and that it is bankrupt. The people who get it like it, by and large.
The people who are riding on a train that's 3 miles away from running off of a cliff are happy as they can be because they haven't run off the cliff yet.
That's really the unfortunate reality. People don't quite understand how all this stuff works, and politicians play to that. The big interests, not the small businesses, but the big interests get their way. I mean, a good example, and this is what I focus most of my work on, is on legal policy, are the lawyers here.
Yeah.
Everyone is at least theoretically asked to make some sacrifice in this bill, except for the lawyers. There's no tort reform whatsoever. There's no liability reform.
See, this is an example of the disingenuousness of the people who are authoring these bills. They want reform, and they try to tell you, we've got to do this for America, but there's not one teardrop in this thing for lawyers, is there?
Well, let me explain what they have. In the Senate bill, they have a sense of the Senate that there should be some sort of look at liability reform. So basically they have nothing
except
saying that, this is kind of popular. We're going to say we think that this should be looked at, but we're not going to put it in this grand overarching 2,000-page bill because we don't really want to do that.
Jim, I'm renaming that. It's now called the nonsense of the Senate. Go ahead.
The House bill does have a provision in it. It's Section 2531 on page 1,431 of the Pelosi bill. And it's a medical liability alternative provision that is looks to be based on President Obama's speech where he called for funding demonstration projects in the states. The unfortunate problem here is that the legislation basically limits the only demonstration projects that you can have to window dressing projects, and in fact creates a fiscal incentive for state governments to avoid enacting the tort reforms that have worked elsewhere.
Wow.
Because you can't get the money from the federal government if you're the state government if you do the traditional tort reforms. So effectively what it's doing is holding the federal money pot out there to cash-strap state legislatures and saying, you can get federal money if you do these little demonstration projects that aren't going to fix anything, but you can't do any real demonstration projects or do the things that have worked in other states because they're not allowed
to get
the money.
They really are saying if states adopt malpractice tort reform, they will not get access to the money.
That's correct.
They're telling them, folks, understand, and I've heard this from, this is not, Jim Copeland is one of the voices talking about this. This is the truth. If that doesn't make you mad, I don't know what else we can do. Tintil, stay with us. We'll be right back. In the market down in New Orleans, Scott Oxley, but no, it's doing all right. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with us. We're visiting with our good friend Jim Copeland. He's with the Manhattan Institute. Jim, tell us how we can find you, and tell us a little bit about the Manhattan Institute.
The Manhattan Institute is a nonpartisan public policy think tank founded 30 years ago in New York. It's a 501c3 corporation, and we do policy research in a lot of different areas, legal reform, health care and medical policy, energy and the environment, and lots of urban issues. A lot of the ideas that helped to revive New York under Mayor Rudy Giuliani emanated out of MI, and we continue to work on a lot of those types of issues. You can find us at www.manhattan-institute.org. You can also find a lot of my work at www.pointoflaw.com and www.triallawyersinc.com.
Right.
Two websites we've got. The first is like a legal weblog and web magazine. The second's got reports on the litigation industry and what the trial lawyers are up to in various states and various areas of lawsuits.
And also City Journal?
City Journal is our in-house publication. It comes out quarterly. It focuses particularly on a lot of these urban issues, but also lots of other public policy issues and cultural issues as well. Folks can find that at www.city-journal.org.
A lot of your colleagues at the Manhattan Institute, I know that we can find their writing there too as well. And I like for my folks to keep up with you guys because you write some good stuff, have some good ideas. Jim, so let's move forward. I believe I mean it's very sad to me to think of what hath been wrought over the last a few months with this healthcare thing. I think we're going to look back and we're going to realize that it was a huge mistake, maybe even a very dangerous mistake. But that's, I think it's a fait accompli. I think the deal is done. All we can do now, Jim, is try to somehow make this less damaging, less dangerous. What are the steps?
I think that's right, and I think what we have to do is, once the final legislation comes through, we can fairly predict what the outcome will be. If there is an insurance mandate but no public option, prices are not going to be constrained by this reform. People
yeah.
will get on the insurance rolls. Prices will go up. We've seen this happen in Massachusetts that tried the similar plan.
Yep.
And so what's going to happen then is, what's our policy response going to be? And the left is going to be pushing for, now we need the public option to come in, and what we're going to have to say is, no, now we need to have competition across state lines and
right.
get rid of these mandates. And that's going to be the intellectual debate. If the public option's in there, I expect what will happen is that the government public option will start to soak up folks that are from the private market. That may constrain costs in the short run, but what's going to end up happening is that businesses are going to look, and where they can do it from a positive cash flow position, from a net present value position, even paying higher taxes and penalties under the legislation, they're going to start dropping people off the insurance, off their private insurance, and they're going to be going into the public option, which will both balloon the size of the government budget, because I don't think there's any way the government can make money at this
right.
and be cost-effective vis-a-vis the private insurers. So it's going to cost more money, and the people are going to be unhappy about losing their private insurance. If
and
that
in the
happens,
and in the process,
we're going to have to come in and say, wow, we've really got to fix this.
And in the process, it will have hurt those private companies that are out there, wouldn't it?
Of course it will.
Because they would have lost their customers, basically. The customer
yeah,
base will have gone to the government.
It's going to, it would wreak a lot of havoc on the insurance markets more generally,
yeah.
and
which
happy,
means
it's,
which
it's
means that it would not
unwind. I mean, that's why the public option thing does matter. It's going to be harder to unwind once that's out there, because once people are on that public option, you know, they're not going to want to lose that insurance either, and so
and
it's
therefore
going to be a more
the competition
process.
The competition would be over. See, they're talking about bringing the government in to create competition, but that would be over. But here's my question quickly. Can enough moderates on both sides of the aisle, and the Republicans, hopefully, add enough to this to make this thing turn out to be somewhat of a system that works? Is that even possible?
I'm skeptical that that's possible in this
yeah.
Congress, honestly.
Yeah,
I think you can mitigate the damage. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think there's anything here that's going to work. What will it work in doing? And there
yeah.
are competing goals here.
Yeah.
Is the goal to get more people covered or to constrain costs? I do think that these bills will work to get more people covered. I don't think that they'll constrain costs.
And they won't get, as, you know, they keep talking about all the people who are uninsured. We now know there'll still be a lot of people uninsured with this program. Hey, Jim, Manhattan-Institute.com. Thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thanks for having me,
Jim. Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.